On this week's 51%, an educator seeks to teach Black girls about their heritage and steer them toward a successful future.
So the lessons that are there are for these girls to take and say, it may be hard, but we can do it.
Plus, college students weigh in on how race affects actions. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. The aim is to fill a need not filled by school or even at home, to provide a resource both inspirational and practical. The book Legacies, a Guide for Young Black Women in Planning Their Future, examines the accomplishments and heritage of African Americans through the voices of 16 African queens and nearly 40 successful contemporary Black women. The book offers illustrations, poems, guidance, and interactive exercises intended to help young women with life skills they need to succeed and maximize their impact on society. Dr. Hazel Mahone, along with the late Constance Gibson, are the book's authors. Mahone, a veteran educator, says the book is a conversation starter. I asked her why she chose stories of both African queens and contemporary women.
One of the reasons we chose the queens is because we wanted the young girls to learn of their ancestry and what they had to offer. Then we used the contemporary women who also had a story just at a different time. And we wanted the girls to know that there was nothing to be ashamed of. So we chose Africa and we chose contemporary women. And a lot of times we see Africa as starving children and the way many things are today without them knowing anything about their ancestry or their history. And so we can take, for example, how Queens really built up a big part of Africa. And we have worksheets to go with that so that the girls can start their own ancestry. But the queens were used almost as someone just coming in and saying to them, I know why you're struggling. And it's a mystical kind of person. And if a girl, let's say, is behind in reading and math, she looks around and there's this queen who is saying, you have nothing to be ashamed of. You're behind, but you shouldn't be. And talking with them about their work. And it's in reading and math that we use one of these because this is where our girls are so far behind. And the queen goes on to talk about the calendar that was created based on the moon, how different people had skills in medicine and architecture and engineering and the arts, and how math was used, just an example, to erect the Great Wall in Zimbabwe. And so it gets into modern day myths, such as if you are interested in your schooling, you're acting white. And we wanted to take that away at the same time. And then what we did with that particular one is we decided that we would get women who majored in arts and astronomy and bring those in. And so all of those are listed. And simply because we have been largely left out of history books and our young girls are not aware of the contributions by people who look like them. So we thought if we use the queens going way back in Africa, and then we brought in the contemporary women who picked up that mantle and moved forward. And these contemporary women talk about the challenges that they had, how they got involved, and that it was no cakewalk, but they overcame those challenges. So the lessons that are there are for these girls to take and say, it may be hard, but we can do it. Because I read where this person had had a difficult time, but did not give up. And so that's one of the major pieces of the contemporary women. And then throughout the book, there are opportunities for girls to work on the skills that they need to work on. And one of them really is reading and math. And if you can't read in a literate society, it's going to be hard for you to survive without stealing or without getting involved in something that could eventually lead you to jail. So we're thinking all along the way of what these girls need and what is happening in society right now. And we know that the girls need to be self-sufficient. So we don't only stay with the ancestors and the contemporary women only as it relates to what needs to be done right now. And those self-concept issues that girls have. One of them is the darker girls feeling that they are left out and that they don't love themselves. Whether it's the way they look, what their hair looks like. And so as the queens come in, they come in talking about beauty and dark skin and how that's beautiful. And one of the things that made me so impressed was Lupita Nyong'o, when she came in, it said a lot to Black girls who are not cream colored, so to speak. And that's a big problem with a lot of dark girls. We want them to love themselves. And another thing we looked at was grammar and how that is used and how to get a job. And so we use the grammar. We gave 100 questions about grammar. So if you're going to be self-sufficient, you're going to have a job. And when you go into an interview and you don't speak well, regardless of what you have to offer, that job probably won't be yours. So we looked at what we thought were the very common mistakes that African-American girls make. And that topic may be too hot for a lot of teachers to handle because it looks as if they are attacking the girl while they're trying to get them to speak like them. And the girls might resent it. But if they use this book and looked at how to use English well, and the first thing we do is to give them the list of questions. Then we provide the answers. These kinds of activities are really good for people who want to help these girls, whether it's in community centers, whether it's at schools, but the use of a facilitator is just excellent as far as this book is concerned. So it's not just information about where different people or how they emerged. It's also about how these girls are going to fit into society and make a living. And I'm working with a group of girls now at a high school here in Elk Grove, California. And we just went through a session on financial literacy. They didn't have a clue about what things cost. And so in order for you to stay out of trouble, because it becomes very tempting to young girls to shoplift, and somebody needs to tell them that there is a camera watching everything you do. And if you want to stay out of prison, you'd better begin looking at your education, the money that you can earn. And a lot of them will get it. The statistics are so bad. At the bottom of the barrel, you will find African-American girls. Many of them have the worst grades of any group. And they feel that they can't catch up, so they give up. We want to change their attitudes, or have them change them all together. So the best way we felt that we could do it was to give them the information, provide the assistance where we could, and to help them move from A to Z and not move in to a prison cell, because that's where they will end up. The other thing that is very prevalent is with drugs. That seems to be an easy way out. And there, many of them are easily influenced by guys. And if they're in a bit of trouble, and the guy has a gun, we'll give it to the girl because she doesn't have a record. And he does. And I also worked at one time in the prison system trying to look at the educational programs there. And what I learned is that when girls go to prison, the guys generally don't come to see them. That's not true the other way around. Girls still go to prison to see their boyfriends. But when a girl goes to prison, whether she goes on her own or whether she goes because she is helping the guy, that is usually the end of that relationship. If she has a baby, at that time she's separated from her child. All of those things need to be discussed. And then speaking of the baby, many of our girls are looking for someone to love them, accept them for who they are. And they feel the only way they can do that is to have a baby. And that's mine. That is all mine. So we go into, what do babies cost? What does it mean to have a child when you are a teenager and you don't have a job? You haven't even thought about how you're going to make it. We get into diet and exercise because we look at the statistics there. And the obesity rates among Black women is off the charts. And we know that it's expensive to buy good food. But there are other ways that you can get food and get good, healthy food. And the benefits of exercising. So we have them keeping records so that they themselves will learn how to read labels, that calories count, to stay away from salt and sugar. And I admire Michelle Obama so much for at least bringing that to our attention, and that these girls need to move their bodies.
You know, it's interesting you had mentioned First Lady Michelle Obama, and I was going to ask you, and I still will, overall, apart from healthy habits, do you see that she has been a positive role model for young Black women? And if so, how, apart from what you mentioned?
Oh, I think she has been. And the other thing is, for the first time in their lives, they see someone at the level that Michelle Obama operates. And she has been a great first lady in terms of her dress, her style, and you don't see her going out with cleavage showing. She dresses in a way that you would want to emulate her. She speaks well. All of the kinds of things that we're trying to get these girls to do. Now, Michelle had a mother and a father, and she talks about them all the time. But if you don't have a mother and a father, this book is definitely for you. Just hearing about their home life, that's a stable life. So that's an example that the girls can see. And they've probably heard that her husband and the mother and the two kids, and in this case, the grandmother, that they sit down and eat dinner together. So many of our girls eat on the run because that's the way the families eat. There is so much, so much to learn from sitting down at the table and eating and talking. That's what my father gave me. My mother died when I was 7 years old. And so my father basically reared us. But he always made it clear that at dinner time, you will sit. And in order to get up from the table, you had to be excused. I learned more at that dinner table than I learned anywhere else in my life when I take away the academics, because I went to college to get the academics. But my life's lessons came from being at that dinner table.
I wanted to just, in closing, you mentioned so many challenges for young Black women, and I wanted to know if you kind of had a top tier one. Is there one that really stands out that would help with all the others if you could overcome that one challenge?
I think the one challenge is reading and speaking, because that gets us in the door. And I think a lot of respect goes with that.
That was Dr. Hazel Mahone, co-author of Legacies, a guide for young Black women in planning their future. Does your race affect how you act? Well, it probably affected how you answered that question. In this award-winning story here, one girl's experience with a preschool teacher who thought she could decide her student's race, and hear why one young man decided he had to hate fried chicken, even if he really liked it. As Shante Stowell tells us, her race and identity in American literature class prompted her to think about how race affects our actions.
In my race and identity literature class this semester, the professor asked us about a time in our lives when we felt raced, a time when race had influenced how we behaved. It took me a really long time to decide what my answer was, so I decided to ask some of my friends to see what their reactions were.
My name's Joe.
I'm Megan.
I'm Ryan McDermott. I'm white / Caucasian.
I asked them to tell me about one time in their lives when they felt like their actions were influenced by their race.
Can I think?
I'm not sure offhand.
How about...
Is it bad that I'm not, like, I can't think of anything?
That's tough because I don't think my actions are usually driven by my race.
My name is Amelia Smith. When I was living overseas in Eritrea, there were very few expats in the country, so most people were local, and so they were, like, dark-skinned. If they saw, like, people who looked white, then they would sometimes, like, say things on the street just because, you know, they look different. Or, like, if you were trying to buy things, they would charge more. It sort of made you feel bad for being privileged. I would have felt bad even like associating my experience with the experience of minorities, just because historically everyone else has had it like a lot worse, and I'm so lucky.
When you're treated a certain way without seemingly any cause, it's like the first thing you're going to think jump to is like the thing that makes you different. My name's Xavier Hubbard. I identify as Black. I like to think that I don't act in a certain way because of my race. I intentionally sometimes act not my race, for example, because there are a lot of stereotypes that come with being a Black male. There's the media thug culture, which is very prevalent, and I feel like when most people see me, that's what they expect to see. And so I know for a long part of my life, I actively rejected all the things that would stereotypically categorize a Black male. Like, I intentionally didn't play basketball. I even didn't like fried chicken or watermelon on principle, because those were things that I saw as negative stereotypes affecting me. Instead of being ashamed of the things that made me who I was, I should have embraced them and shown that even if I like watermelon, even if I like fried chicken, these don't define me. I'm far greater than that. I'm much more, and it's your fault for not understanding that.
I'm Sammy Harper. So I've always been in a weird place with race because I, like, am half Black and half white. So it's been a thing my entire life. In preschool, one of my teachers told me that I had to choose and that I should choose Black. And I went home and told my mom, who is white, who's the white half. I was like, "Mommy, I'm Black." And she's like, "No, you are half and half. You don't have to decide. It's you're both." She went into the teacher and was like, "What the f*** did you tell my child?" There's also, like, every time you take a standardized test, now a lot of them have two races and you can, like, mark that. But when I was little, up through, like, 10th and 11th grade, they didn't really have the two race option. So you could say other or you could say Black. So that's an interesting thing that I've, like, struggled with a lot. Like, which one do I write? Because I am half Black. And if that gets me more things, do I use that as, like, an opportunity, or do I just, like, let it go and say, like, I'm other? My parents have always tried to downplay it and, like, celebrate both sides. They were just like, it shouldn't matter what race you are. Like, just accept it. Just be who you are and you'll be fine.
Through this process, I've still been thinking about my own answer. Like many of my white friends, no particular event comes to mind. But in some ways, I think that's my answer. People don't put me in a box based on my skin color, and I don't have to think about negative stereotypes. On a day-to-day basis, I have no awareness of my own race. And simply not having to think affects my actions. This piece was produced by me, Shantae Stowell. Special thanks to the MIT Terrascope Program for lending me recording equipment, to my professor, Sandy Alexander, and to all the people who took time to talk to me about their thoughts and experiences, on or off tape.
I'd like to close this week's show with a personal anecdote. I was walking my dogs the other day, and approaching us just as they were coming into form as recognizable human beings, I readied my warning about one of my dogs. Now, both of my dogs are on leashes, and one is absolutely fine with anything two- or four-legged, minus squirrels, and the other one is a bit exuberant and fearful at the same time. So I do like to give a warning, even though I'll keep her close to my side. So as the walk progresses and the couple gets much closer, I reiterated my warning that the one on my right is a little funny and I'll keep her close. And they were kind of bending down as if they wanted to pet the other one. And I said, "Oh yeah, the Black and white one is fine." And the woman turned to me and she said, "Of course he is." And off we all went. It took me several steps for what she said to sink in. And for some reason, that comment has stuck with me for days. It resonated. Blue, blue, you can dog you. 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 And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org and follow us on Twitter at 51% Radio. This week's show is number 1386.